You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
Hi, everyone. My guest today is De La Vega. De La Vega is a film, TV, commercial, and digital content director. We met about 4 years ago through some mutual friends, and I'm such a fan of his work. He's also a fellow artist parent. His first daughter is just a few months older than Cecilia, so we've been bonding over what that life is like. You can check out his feature film, Bookends, now available streaming on Amazon Prime. The web series he co-directed with Pepper Binkley, who was my guest on episode 127 of The Compass, is on Vimeo. And you can see what else he's up to at delavega.squarespace.com. I hope you enjoy the 159th episode of The Compass. Yourself from going to the dark side as an artist?
It's a combination of things. So meditation for me is a big one. I've been meditating since I was like 5 or 6.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, my parents got into it. I think my dad got into it and then sort of shared it with everyone in the family. And so I've been doing some form of it since then. So I think that's really helped me whenever I get anxiety, you know, sort of get overwhelmed about something, which is for me is what my darkness is. Right. Definitely getting wrapped in my brain and overthinking. So I think, you know, meditation, hanging out with my family, right? My wife, I've got 2 daughters. So hanging out with them, just sort of playing, you know, focusing on them and not really work. You know, and then also I think when it becomes, you know, darkness about art, right? And the creativity or sort of lack of or hitting a wall. I definitely speak to there's certain friends that I speak to about it. You know, friends that are in the industry that I reach out to. You know, some are mentors, some are fellow directors, and you know, they're all friends. And so, you know, I can talk personal stuff with them as well as industry stuff. And it's, you know, this sort of great blend and able to give advice on everything.
Those are the best relationships to have.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned anxiety. Like when I say the dark side, is that mainly what comes up for you? Is it kind of like a lack of inspiration, or is it more, can it be more about like the business commerce side of things, or what form does it usually take for you?
For me, it's more of, you know, not wanting to do secret projects, right? That's like a term that one of my good friends uses, right? It's like, oh, I made a secret film. It's great. I love it. But like, no one knows about it, right?
That term.
Yeah. And you know, and some things are great, I think, specifically, like if you go in with that being the intention, like this is just a practice, right? This is just me having fun. This is just me, just sort of exercising my creativity. But when it is something that you've put money into, or you've put hundreds of hours into, you know, creating this thing, and then it just sort of sits in the void, I think that's where anxiety comes from. You know, and attaching fulfillment to that, I think is a big thing. And so realizing that I don't have to feel fulfilled from my art, or from people seeing it, or from people liking it, you know, I can.
Right, that's a tricky line, right? Between desiring that, so it's not a secret, like you said, and also not placing all your self-worth on it.
Totally, absolutely, yeah. And I think since this new world that we're in, right, with COVID-19, I've really, you know, my, not that priorities have changed, but I'm not so focused on work because there's sort of a lack of it right now. You know, and I'm limited to what I can create, because I'm, you know, I've got two babies and a wife that none of them are actors yet. and so, shifting to being more of a stay-at-home dad and realizing like, oh, this is so much more fulfilling, even though it's just as exhausting, right? You know, I'm putting in 16, 17 hour days, but it's incredible. You know, it's so fun. Like right now, my oldest is 2 in a week and a half.
Oh my gosh, so soon.
And, yeah. And every day it's just these new things, like every parent says, right? But it's like every day is just these new things. Like yesterday, the big thing was she lied to us for the first time, which was incredible.
To see it happening.
Totally. She wanted a pacifier after breakfast. And I told her like, hey, you know, pacifiers are just for when your teeth are hurting and for when we're going to take a nap. And like right now we're going to go play for a while. So you don't need it. And so, you know, she grumbled a bit and then sort of forgot. And then half an hour later we're playing and she just starts crying out of nowhere. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she starts pointing at her teeth and she goes, teething, teething. And I was just like, you are not teething. You've got all your teeth right now. But I was like, that was just beautiful. It was, yeah. So now we know she lies. She's manipulating us. We're ready for it.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, that was kind of what I wanted to ask next is just how are you guys doing with all of this right now?
Great. We are incredibly fortunate. So we have some friends who live in Romania and they own a home in upstate New York. And as soon as actually we were supposed to be meeting them in Europe, I think the week that they locked everything down.
Oh, my God.
And so they were like, look, like we're not able to go home. You guys can't leave. So like we've got our home if you guys want to go up and use it. So we've been here for 3 months now.
The whole time. Wow.
The entire time. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. With two kids, that must be so much easier than in the city.
It's, yeah, it's incredible because we went
from, even if it's not your space.
Yeah. 100%. But I sort of, they gave us that idea with enough time that I was able to do like 3 car trips out here with stuff. So it definitely is starting to feel like home. Or, yeah, at least from the beginning was even feeling like home because we were able to bring so much here. And it's in the middle of nowhere. It's surrounded by, I always say it's surrounded by forests and farms. And so we go on hikes every day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's been an incredible gift that they've given us.
And remind me what your wife does.
She's a psychologist.
Okay. Great. Yeah. I knew she wasn't in the arts, but she's able to work virtually.
She is. So she was on maternity leave up until, I think a month ago. So we have a 7 month old or 7 months today. So she had 6 months maternity leave. And so that first bit, we were just here, you know, sort of trying to get used to this new world and, you know, hiking a lot and playing. But yeah, now she works from home, which is great. And she works, she has a private practice and she also has a job running or helping run an anxiety clinic for adolescents.
Wow.
Yeah.
This must be a crazy time for her work then as well.
Definitely. Yeah. She thought that there would be a, you know, a bit of a shift where maybe people wouldn't want to work as much or do therapy as much, you know, with the private practice just because they'd want to, you know, save money or whatever it is, or just not able to sort of find the time or place and doing it. But people really did adapt quickly to teletherapy. And have appreciated it, like have found this sort of as their refuge. It's been great for her.
Yeah. So you're a filmmaker. How do you guys navigate your relationship as an artist and a non-artist? I'm kind of in the opposite situation, being married to another actor. I'm so curious.
It's interesting. You know, I'll show her projects sometimes and, you know, it'll be like, oh, yeah, I like it. But it's like not giving me the sort of creative advice that I'll seek from it. Mm-hmm. But she's also able to, and maybe this is just her, maybe this is just sort of coming from her profession, but really, you know, able to calm me or calm me out on, you know, on any sort of nonsense that I'm sort of wrapped up in. you know, sometimes I think there's definitely difficulty if, you know, having, like I said, like 16 hour days on set, right? Or going away, you know, on location, mm-hmm. where, you know, I'm not home, and it's, you know, and everyone who's been on set, especially, you know, being away on set, it feels like camp. So you've become friends with these people. And so it's like not just working, but then after, you're also, you know, doing what I call also work. It's like you're getting together at the bar and you're hanging out and you're talking, right? Because these are the people that are going to give you work next time. Exactly. So you want to make sure that you're hanging out with the producers. You want to make sure that you're hanging out, you know, with the actors or whoever else. But it's hard to see that from the other end, you know, definitely from her perspective, where it's like, hey, like, I'd like to FaceTime with you too. I'd like to, you know, chat and hang out. And I've been lucky enough where since our babies have been born, I haven't had that much, you know, any projects away. They've mainly been in New York City or sort of the surrounding area.
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
So your film Bookends is on Amazon now.
Mm-hmm.
So lovely. And I had watched it a year or two ago when you had sent it to me, but I rewatched it this morning. I have to say, it was a dark film to watch in the morning.
Yeah, that's heavy.
Can you tell me a little bit about like where you are in the journey with that film? Because something that I'm not a filmmaker, but it seems like it requires a lot of stamina. Like it's a long game, right?
Definitely. And
where are you in the experience with this particular film?
So, you know, near the end, right? So this, for me, this, like we were saying, like talking about secret projects, right? Like this was a bit of a secret film where I was in, you know, I was living in Los Angeles for 6 years. And I'd worked as a producer for commercials for 2 years. And then, you know, did well in that, was happy with that, but wasn't feeling that fulfillment creatively. And so, you know, talking it over with my wife, we decided, all right, you know, we'll stop producing and focus more of like being on set. So I was doing more of ADing and directing and sort of balancing that life. And it was definitely more ADing than directing at that point. And then we fast forward 6 years, we decided that we were going to be moving to New York City. And I had a bit of a little mental breakdown, being like, I've been in LA for 6 years, and I came here with the intention of making a film, with making a feature film and being a feature film director, and sort of, you know, holding all that stress over my head, and I haven't done it. And so the lead actress in this film, Kat Espaillat, her and I had been sort of over the year, that last year in LA, just sort of working ideas, seeing like what could we film, like either shorts or features, but trying to just workshop ideas together. And when we decided we were going to move that night, I just put pen to paper and I wrote I think like a 20 something page treatment for Bookends. And I had the idea of doing a Duplass Brothers type film, you know, Joe Swaberg type film, where everything was based on a treatment. But the actors and I would sort of workshop it, and we would work on the dialogue or sort of improv the dialogue as we were filming. And so wrote it one night, sent it to four actors, and I said, like, look, I'm filming this in my home in 7 weeks. And so I want to do 6 weeks of pre-production where we're just, you know, we can meet twice a week and we can workshop this. And any questions, we can chat, you know, phone or whatever. But on the 7th week, I just need a commitment from you for Monday through Friday, 5 days. 7 to 7. Like, I have my home from when my wife leaves to work and from when she comes back in. But as soon as she comes in, we're wrapped. So we've got, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. And they were super excited. They read it. They were excited. They're like, great, we're in. Let's do it.
It's kind of amazing what that self-imposed deadline can do, you know?
100%.
Light that fire. Like,
why didn't I do this before? So we filmed it. It was a wonderful experience. It felt very much like theater. I had one of the actors living with me at the time, and it just, yeah, it was great. It was so wonderful. But then I edited it myself. I got paid everything with, you know, with some savings that I had. So it's completely self-financed. You know, but I used the majority of the money for production. And so I spent the next year and a half or so editing the film on my free time. And then sent it out to festivals and, you know, did that. You know, it did well more in fringe festivals, but sort of, you know, won some awards all over, you know, sort of different places all over the world. And then it just sort of sat, right? And it became the secret film, in the sense that, like, the world wasn't seeing it, right? People that I knew would see it, and it was actually helping me get work. I was definitely, people knew that I directed a feature, right? And so that sort of, that held some sort of status. So when I did move to New York, it became a lot easier for me to get work, because people sort of had that trust. And then they also loved the story of, like, oh, you did this thing, and, like, you know, produced it in 6 weeks and you filmed it in a week. Like, tell me that story. And they'd get excited and, like, oh, you know, I'd love to bring that same energy to my project. So it did lead to a lot of work. And then, you know, babies come and it gets so busy that I couldn't work on getting it out there. And then finally, when this happened, it was a time where, like, okay, I can't work. And my wife, since she was still on maternity leave, I was like, look, if you can give me a few days so that you can just be with the kids and I can work on getting this online. So then I got on Amazon and then have been doing word of mouth, emailing people, you know, slowly every day and just getting it out there. And now it's, you know, it's now become a secret film. I looked at it last night at the analytics and 11,000 people have seen it, which is wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Especially right now when everybody is, like, streaming is the thing that people have, the thing that they're doing. So that's great that they're finding it just on their own.
Totally. I was watching, The Descendants the other night. And when it finished, my phone popped up as the, oh, you should watch this next. It
was an incredible, interesting connection.
100%.
But I mean, I know it's a coincidence and that you've had this around, but it's also interesting that the film takes place during a hurricane. And it's only over the course of a night, but it has this sense of being, people being shut inside and not being able to go anywhere. And so I think it's kind of wonderful timing in a way.
Totally. And having to deal with your relationships. Right. You know, it's definitely been, as for many, right. But for, you know, just speaking for myself, like, the first, I'd say 2 months of lockdown were super difficult, because we were around each other all the time. And there was the stress of, like, what's happening in the world, right? Not just what's happening in the world, but then throw in this pandemic, right? Because we're already stressed about what's happening in the world, right? But then you throw in this pandemic and it, you know, there was a lot of stress. So it was definitely a lot of fighting and just sort of getting used to, and, like, having to finally sit back and be like, all right, we need to figure out why we're fighting so much.
Yes.
And let's do a reset. Let's do a hard reset. And I think that's sort of what, you know, some of what happens in the film, where they are locked down and they're having to deal with their emotions or having to deal with their relationship and decisions that they've made that have now altered their relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Even just how not to annoy each other has been an interesting task in this 100%. Pandemic. We've definitely had to have some conversations about, like, okay, we're around each other. We love spending time together and we're around each other even more than we like to be around each other right now. How do we not step on each other's toes?
Yeah, you usually get a 6 to 8 hour break a day. So that when you get to the weekend, you're like, I get to spend time with this person.
Yeah. How do you handle the hustle of being a filmmaker? Because it sounds like in your path, obviously you don't get to always be directing feature films. You have to wear a lot of different hats. Do you enjoy that? Or is it something that... you kind of see a ladder you're climbing and you know it's going to pass, or how do you deal with that part of it?
I think it's a mix. You know, there's definitely aspects that I don't enjoy, which are the, you know, in the industry, always trying to get to that next rung, right? You know, so there's, like, the excitement of, like, oh, I've reached this level, but then, like, I'm still not that level, right? It reminds me of a story of a gaffer friend of mine who was working with Tim Robbins on a film the day after Shawshank won at the Oscars. And he said that he overheard a conversation with Tim Robbins yelling at his agent or manager, trying to get in the room so that he can audition for a part. And he was just like, this is crazy. This never ends. This guy was just at the Oscars for the best film of the year. And he's still fighting to get in a room. Like, how is this possible? And he was like, I'm so happy I'm a gaffer. Like, that's
cool. I don't have to deal with that. I know some stories like that too. Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's that aspect of it, which can be incredibly frustrating. You know, but I feel like I'm a people person, so I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy, you know, connecting. And if it's like, you know, let's go to X place and just like get some coffee or a drink and like, let's talk a project. I enjoy that. And I think I have the not so great sort of part of me that I get excited too early about an idea. I'm like, yeah, this is a great idea. And I've met with this person and they're really excited about it. And like, we're going to go make a movie. It's definitely happening. And I've been in the industry forever. I've worked on thousands of projects, not thousands, hundreds of projects, right, at this point. And so I know the story. I know how it goes, but I still get excited. So, and that excitement is probably what keeps me going every time, because I love making movies. You know, I love being on set. I love working with actors. I love figuring out story. I love being on set and being told, we don't have this location. So what do you want to do? And then problem solving that and figuring it out and still making it work, you know, sitting down with the writer or whoever and still making it work. You know, so I think it's just like maybe the excited little kid in me, right? That just like wants to keep creating art and like the excitement of like creating this, you know, and thinking back of the movies that I love and how they made it and reading stories about how, you know, these directors made their first films and how they were in this, you know, everyone was sort of once in this situation. And I think that's what keeps me going.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about how kind of the quilt of how you put it all together financially? Mm-hmm. I know you said you were directing a lot of commercials along the way. Have you kind of been able to support yourself with that, or have you been doing side jobs as well?
So I would say the directing has always been, because I'll do some commercial directing as well. And I'd say it's maybe like 30-70 at this point, and the 70 being assistant directing. Or producing. And so that is my bread and butter.
Gotcha.
So that's features, that's commercials, that's fashion, that's, you know, industrials, it's tabletop videos, it's whatever they need. I'd sort of jump in, and I've been lucky enough where, you know, I'm at the point where I'm turning down jobs. And
Does a lot of it just come from word of mouth and people that you've met, or do you have any yes. like resources that you use to help you find stuff?
So definitely word of mouth, right? So, you know, even though I still subscribe to, you know, Mandy and all these other, you know, job hunting websites for the industry, I don't think I ever really get work from them.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of I think maybe when I first moved to New York, since I was, even though I had a great resume, I was still sort of starting in this new city, but right now it comes from word of mouth. So just, you know, there's a few different producers that I love working with and that seem to love working with me. And so they'll call me for projects. And if I'm already working on something, what I figured out was I've created a pool of assistant directors around me. So if I can't take a job, I'm like, these are five other great ADs that I think will make you super happy. And so then those producers feel comfortable with me, with my recommendation. And then they work with one of these ADs and they're very happy. And either they, you know, continue working with me because they're so, you know, because they still love me and they're happy with my recommendations, or they move on to that person. But those other ADs as well constantly send me work. Where they're like, look, I'm already working on this feature, but I've got this other feature that's with Susan Sarandon. Do you want to take it? Right? And so it's, and I always thought maybe it would be more of a, we're fighting for the same job, but I feel like I sort of got to a certain level with it where we've realized there's enough work and it's just finding the right people to hand it off to. And then since they're working, you know, and if they're jumping on a feature, they're going to be busy for the next 2 months. So any jobs that come to them in those 2 months, they're going to be happy to send my way.
Right. So it's kind of an informal collective you guys have going on.
Totally. And I don't think any of them know each other. But, you know, it's sort of the spider web for me. And I, you know, they go back my way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What does your family think of you being an artist for your career?
They love it. I come from an incredibly supportive family. Mm-hmm.
You grew up in Miami, right?
Yes, in Miami. Yeah, yeah. Cuban American. My parents Cuban. They came here in the early 50s to the States, mid 50s. And I was born in Miami in the 80s. And yeah, they're super supportive. They're all artists in their own right. So my mom's a singer, and like never like professionally or like as a profession, but she's recorded an album, you know, she loves singing at home. Yeah. So she's an artist that way. My dad, I always say he's an artist. So my dad is a translator interpreter, and his art form is taking language and putting it so that the world can understand. Right. So he's been the voice of the last, I think, 8 presidents.
Oh, my goodness.
The last 40 years. So if if one of the presidents is speaking and he, you know, you log on to Univision or Telemundo, you'll hear his voice as the president.
Wow.
And yeah. And so he's done, you know, he's been doing since he graduated. I think he went to college for it and just been doing it forever. One of my brothers, I've got 2 brothers. One is a musician and has been in multiple bands and now doesn't do that professionally, but is still, you know, constantly writing music, sending me songs to listen to. Actually, his band is the band that does the soundtrack for my film.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so it was great. It was really nice to work together in that. And my other brother, he worked in the industry for a while, and he's more, I'd say, of a producer and of like as a creative producer. And so he worked in the film industry and then transferred over to video games and did that for a while. And then has come home and is now working with my parents' company and helping run the company.
That's so great that everyone at least is like on the same vibe and can appreciate each other's work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's great. I can, I'll send them all, and I'm always sending them my work. Like, you know, when it's a work in progress, and they always love it, even though I know it's not great. When it's a work in progress, they're like, "Oh, this is so awesome. Like, I can't wait to see it finished." And they'll, you know, they'll watch the 11 different versions of whatever I'm sending them. You know, and my brothers will give notes. My parents, I could do whatever and they would love. So they're not great for notes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So I think we first met when Frankie was working with you and Pepper on It's Freezing Out There.
No, we met
did
before,
we meet before
that.
That? When did we meet?
I did a reading for a film. This was soon after I moved to New York. And this was, so it was right around the election. It was literally, we did the reading, I think 2 days after Trump won. And this was a film about rape culture in Hollywood. And does not have a happy ending. Basically, the bad guy gets away with it. You know, but it's a film that showed how it is that rapists and these monsters get away with this for years, for decades. And I didn't realize it, you know, it's like I'd scheduled this and wasn't expecting Trump to win the presidency. And so we did this reading and everyone was just so mentally effed from it. Do you remember now?
Now I'm remembering this.
because I had heard about you and I tried, I invited you to come.
And Frankie and I came.
Yeah. And I remember like asking you like, hey, so like, you know, and
yes,
can I get
okay.
some notes? And you're like,
I'm embarrassed that I was not at the front of my mind.
But, that's totally fine. But then we didn't see each other for a very long time until that project.
Right. Oh my gosh. I think I've kind of erased that entire month out of my mind. Did it happen? Is it still happening?
Yeah. Like I said, there's a lot going on in the world.
Well, we reconnected mm-hmm. when you guys were doing It's Freezing Out There.
Yeah.
And then you and Pepper also did a short film that you sent me called Hey Mama. Mm-hmm. More recently. That was after.
Yeah. That was a few months ago. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your collaboration. It seems like you guys work really well together and you have this interesting, I kind of love that the projects you've been working on are kind of parent focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So It's Freezing Out There came about from Pepper, I think, doing a workshop for It's Freezing Out There, or like a reading for it. And she wanted to team up with someone, or was considering teaming up with someone, because she was considering playing the lead. And someone there, actually, I think Ceci Fernandez recommended me. And she was looking for a woman to team up with, but she was like, look, it's a man, but this man is as close to being a woman as he can be. He's very, very sensitive. So, you know, give him a chance. And so we met. And she saw Bookends, and she was like, this is totally the kind of thing. Like, that was one of those projects where this was like, this is absolutely how I want to make this film.
A lot of improv. Like this.
Yeah. So we started working on it together, and it's been this incredible relationship. It's wonderful. We've become really good friends. We've traveled the world together with our families. I mean, it's been wonderful. I miss her so much. She's now with her family in Washington. We text and talk often, but our families have become really close. And she's got two kids that are a little bit older than mine. And so, yeah, so she was doing this project about, egg freezing, and it was based a bit off of her experience. We filmed it. I think over a week, it was sort of the same idea where we worked with our actors for a little bit and then filmed it over 2 weeks. One of the things that I always say, like people ask me like, oh, which do you like better, LA or New York? And for me, it really is an experiencing both. It's really become New York. And it's because I feel like the filmmakers here really are more like artists, where it's not about, you know, it isn't always about the what's this project going to bring me, right? Or like, how much money is this going to pay? Like, if it doesn't hit like my minimum, then like, I'm not going to do it. But I feel like people in New York are just excited about creating something cool, and if they come across something cool, they're more than willing to jump on board and be a part of it. And so with It's Freezing Out There, between the two of us, we were able to pull a lot of actors who read it and were really excited about it. Actors like, you know, Frankie being one of them, mm-hmm. and were really excited about it. And there are some actors that were like on these Tony Award-winning Broadway shows who would come and play with us for, you know, 5 hours, and then be like, all right, hey, I've got another hour left because I got to get on the train and get to Midtown because I'm going to be on stage. And to me, it was mind-boggling. It was just such a beautiful experience to be like, I'm working with these wonderful people who are just like having a good time. So we filmed this 12-episode web series, and we did the festival circuit with it. It got written up in a bunch of places. It got written up in The Week. Lena Dunham's company tweeted about it, saying like, this is a show that, you know, everyone should be seeing right now. And so, yeah, it got some great press. And we, I think, fell in love with working with each other. We have this great collaboration. And so we came up with an idea for a film, and we decided to make a short version of it, which was Hey Mama.
Oh, okay.
And so Hey Mama is it's a film about a pregnant woman's last days before being induced where she's told by her doctors that if you don't go into labor naturally, we're going to have to induce you. And she's, you know, 2 weeks overdue. And she is, you know, not, she's too much in her head about it. And so, you know, it's spending the last days. And so what we wanted to do as an exercise with this short was actually work with a pregnant actress, because we've got a bigger picture film that we've written and that we're, you know, sort of rewriting now, which is a bit of a boyhood type film, but it's about motherhood. And it's about a woman who finds out she's pregnant and wasn't necessarily trying to get pregnant. And then going through that entire experience, going through those 10 months of pregnancy. And the idea is that we would actually work with a pregnant actress. Oh, and cool. We'd go from, you know, once they found out, right, you know, that they're 2 or 3 months pregnant, we'd sort of do those first 3 months of the film. And then every month we'd get together, you know, for 4 to 5 days and film that next segment of the film. And, you know, in the end, actually film the pregnancy. And that way, you know, one,
you mean like film the birth at the end? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, film the birth. Yeah. So In the end, we would film, not the pregnancy, we would film the birth.
Already filming the pregnancy.
Yeah. So, you know, so the idea is like, we're going from conception to birth, and you're seeing right. The change that a woman goes through, right? Where it's like that internal change, the external change, the way that the world sees her, the way that she sees the world. And so we did Hey Mama with Lindsay Broad, and she was 9.5 months pregnant. And I think she went into labor the week after we filmed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it was incredible. I mean, and it was such a learning experience, being like, okay, we can't push our actress.
we can't climb those stairs again.
Totally. Like, we've got a limited amount of takes for her climbing stairs. And that was a fear of mine, where I was like, you know, in this film, she's doing all these things to go into labor, and we're having right. her do all these things. So she's going to go into labor. But thank God she did.
I loved it so much, because I will say that was my experience with our baby. Mm-hmm. I was 2 weeks overdue and had to be induced. Yeah. And I was remembering those last couple of days where I was like, walking in 90 degree heat for 3 miles and just like trying to make something happen. I loved it. But I love that larger idea. It's kind of like boyhood-esque in more of a 10-month time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's, you know, my films have always been influenced by what's going on in my life. Mm-hmm. Right. So for Bookends, my wife and I had a party in our house in LA, and, you know, everyone was like hanging out, drinking, and sort of, you know, as the night's ending, you know, friends are leaving. And, you know, by the end of the night, it was us and another couple that were there hanging out. And, you know, I was talking to my friend's wife, my friend was talking to my wife, and like everyone was just like having a good time, and like people were drunk, and it was like very loose. And I had the thought of like, man, the energy in this room could totally go in a completely different direction. And it was like, what would happen if that happened? And that's, you know, that's what sparked the idea for Bookends, right? And, you know, while we were filming It's Freezing Out There, I think by the end of it, there was 8 babies that came from it. It was either like we were working pregnant actresses or people conceived babies while we were shooting, you know, and 9 months later there was a baby, which was my story, because we did a Q&A with a doctor because we worked with a clinic, and one of, you know, in working with them, one of the things that we did was had one of their doctors come and actually do a talk with me through our character in, and we filmed it. And he was saying, you know, talking about how after 35, you know, the amount that the eggs, you know, start dropping. And he freaked me out. And like, when we finished filming, he's like, yeah, does anyone like have any questions? And I was just like, I don't have a question, but I just got to say, like, you're freaking me out. Like, I feel like I need to go home and impregnate my wife tonight. And he was like, well, how old is she? And I, you know, I told him, he was like, yeah, well, yeah, you should. And literally, like, 3 days later, she was born. And so, yeah, you know, and I've definitely been affected by fatherhood and like the stress, you know, that was coming. Like, as you know, this baby's coming and your world's going to change, and everyone's telling you that your world's going to change, but you don't know how it's going to change. And they tell you, you're not going to know how it's going to change, but it's going to change. And I think that was part of Hey Mama, where you're so wrapped in your head because you're excited about this baby coming, but you're also so scared because you don't know. So, you know, it's the fear of the unknown, right? Which I think is a lot of my anxiety comes from, is fear of unknown. But yeah, it totally worked into, you know, I think these beautiful projects.
I love it. Are there any lessons you've learned in the last couple years, as an artist or as a parent, that you're really proud of that you want to share with me? Could be something small.
Mm-hmm. Let me think. Yeah, I think, you know, maybe it's sort of piggybacking to what I was saying before, but not letting my career be the only thing that fulfills me, and not putting so much into it, and realizing that it won't always fulfill me, you know, and with, you know, with our industry, like, there definitely is ageism. Right. And there's going to be, you know, at a certain point where I'm just going to be too old, you know, too old to be like the young, cool guy with his ideas coming in. And, you know, and just getting that, I get that from having, you know, my wife and my daughters, you know, and I get that fulfillment from being a stay-at-home dad with them right now. Right. And teaching them. Yeah, so I think the lesson for me is not putting your happiness, you know, solely on your art, because I think it's a trap, you know, especially right now where it's like, we don't know the state of our industry, you know, and being an independent filmmaker, like, I don't know how this is really going to affect. You know, I can think about it, you know, and I can sort of talk to friends about what they think is going to happen, but we still don't know how it's going to change everything. You know, and indie filmmaking has already been cut off so much, you know, like since the late 90s, mm-hmm. that right now it's like, I feel like maybe it's silly, you know, thinking this way, but it's like teetering, like, is it, you know, going to be like the nail in the coffin, you know, or not? And I think there'll always be indie films, but the ability to make those films and have people actually really see them. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think this is me looking from the outside, but I think you've been so smart being involved in so many different ways of presenting work, from like working with like the Insta mini series format, mm-hmm. or like what It's Freezing Out There was put out on Vimeo. There's so many different platforms now.
Totally.
I think you've been really kind of smart in diversifying the things you have to show.
Yeah. I mean, I've been lucky where it's working with others. Right. Which is one of the things that I love about filmmaking, is that collaboration, you know, so it's not always, you know, it's not always my idea. Right. So like the Insta miniseries, that was something that I was just brought onto. And right. I was lucky enough where when I moved to you know, move to New York, you know, Nikki Borges, you know, had just finished doing season one, and they're about to do, or maybe they'd done two seasons and they're about to start doing a third, and you know, and I had producing experience, AD experience, and so they asked me to jump on board and produce, you know, this project. And the third season ended up being creating the last project that David Bowie did, and That's so insane. Yeah, and so, you know, just, you know, literally 2 weeks after moving here, I had this incredible experience, that, yeah, that was beautiful. And it was on Instagram. And it was, you know, and it would just, it had just really, people had just started, you know, putting projects on Instagram. And so that's the thing. It's like, you know, what I was saying before, it's like, I don't know if it'll ever really die, but it is scary to sort of think where we're at right now. And where financing is going to come from for these smaller films, because people are being a bit tighter right now, you know, and aren't making money. And that's a scary thing about right now. It's that I know so many people that are struggling because they don't have work, right? And so many people that had restaurant jobs that, you know, haven't been working.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, that's, I think that's the scariest thing for me, is just knowing all the people that are suffering financially and the stress that that brings, because I've been there too.
Yeah. I know you're extremely busy right now in this time period with your kids and everything, but have you been feeling inspired to write or anything around the fringes, definitely, or has it just been too much to handle?
No, definitely. There's writers that I'm constantly working with, where, you know, one of my mentors, you know, is this friend of mine, Christopher Pratt. He is this incredible writer. And he decided, let's see, maybe this was 5 years ago. Yeah, it was right around when I moved here. He decided that he was going to become a writer. He was a manager before, and he managed writers himself and directors, and decided that he wanted to write. And he's written, I think, 60 scripts in 60 months.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He moved to the woods and, you know, cut his rent from, you know, what he was, you know, paying in LA, living in the hills, and, like, you know, decided to move to the woods with his family and really focus on writing. And so he's constantly sending me stuff, right? Or, you know, we'll constantly talk about ideas. So there's a few scripts that we're working on. And I've got a friend of mine who's a producer here in the States, but he's Spanish. And so he does a lot of work in Spain as well. And so we've been talking a few ideas about what we can go and shoot in Spain right now, because they just gave him some incredible incentives, where I think in the end, it'll be as if you spent 15% of what it would actually cost you to make your film.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that I was thinking that as you were talking about the scripts, like, are you approaching them as you normally would, or are you taking into consideration, like, how could we make this so that we can film it easily in whatever this mid or post pandemic world is?
Totally. Yeah, I'm definitely considering that. And that's what I do for all my projects, right? So with Bookends, it was, what do I have? I have a house that I live in, and I've got actors, you know, accessible to me. So that's what we did. You know, with the freezing out there, we filmed in all locations that we owned or that we could borrow from people. And so with this, it's the same thing, right? So this producer, you know, he's done some projects in the Canary Islands. And so he sent me, like, this, these are the locations, right? They've got, you know, their own location film board, for the Canary Islands. Like, these are all our locations. So this is what we have access to. What scripts can you bring me that fit within this? Because I want to make something with you. And this is how I can make it.
Interesting.
And so now, yeah. And so now it's considering, you know, everything that would work within there. And even like, so now, I mean, I'm talking to the writer that I mentioned, and going back to his scripts and be like, what scripts do we have that fit in here? So it's not that we have to actually write something, but we can just see something that already sort of fits in that peg, and hand it off. And then maybe we make that.
Right.
Yeah.
These last two little questions are just, when you do feel yourself going to that dark place or that uninspired place, like, are there any tangible things that you reach for again and again, like a book or that you go back to again and again, or music or a place that you go, something like that?
Yeah. So definitely not music, because I really like becoming depressed with music. I'm all about the sad music. Like, I will just sit in a room and cry listening to music, but not because I'm sad from, like, the first thing that was stressing me, but the singer's voice is just, like, destroying me. So not music, but yeah, things like, I definitely will be proactive about meditating, for sure.
But do you have you come across anything? I know you started so young, but have you had friends who started meditating later in life, like any resources that they've used to do that, or just tell them to be quiet and sit down and just go for it?
there's a bunch of apps, right? So there's, you know, there's a few different apps. right? So like I practice mainly TM, which is transcendental meditation. So I've got this word that I repeat, you know, sort of my mantra that I just sort of repeat in my head. And I focus on that, which helps me sort of lose focus on everything else. But so there's some apps that will automatically give you that. They'll say like, this is your word. Just sort of repeat this, you know, repeat this humming sort of word in your head. And you can do, you know, 10, 20 minutes of that. I think Russell Simmons has an app that I use for that sometimes. There's another one called Buddhify, which is more of like mindfulness meditation, where there's a person speaking and they're walking you through the meditation, and they'll give you different topics. Like if you're having flight anxiety, right? Like getting on a plane and traveling, which is some of my anxiety. So, you know, sometimes I listen to that, or things about work or family, different kinds of stressors. Let's see. And there's a few books that I read. So there's an essay that I read when I was 17 that really changed my life and just sort of my outlook on life. And it's called The Iron, and it's about Henry Rollins, or it's by Henry Rollins, and it's about how he got into working out and just sort of how his mindset changed from it. But one of the things that he talks about is, you know, he used to be this very depressed kid and this very just sort of sad and weak-minded kid. But when he started working out, he realized that he had all this power in him. He just didn't know how to harness it. And so he says, if you're feeling depressed and you've got this negative energy, instead of doing something negative with it, like, you know, popping pills or, you know, or drinking too much, why not channel that energy into something positive, like working out, right? So it's like, you know, so I use that to remind myself. So if I'm feeling in a negative place, well, go outside and go for a walk, right? Or go for a jog, go for a hike, sit and meditate, you know, do some push-ups, whatever it is. But do something active with that energy and take it to a positive place.
Right.
And then the other one is a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman. And it's sort of a similar story, but it's based on a true story, where it's this college gymnast who is this, you know, Olympic athlete, and he ends up breaking his leg in a motorcycle accident. And it's all about how he recovers from that mentally and physically by working with this gas station attendant who sort of ends up becoming his like guru mentor. You know, it takes place, I think, in like 1967. So it's definitely like new age, sort of hippie-ish. But I've read it like 7 times. Like whenever I feel like I'm going to a dark place, I reread it. It's a quick read, and I've recommended it to people, and they've told me that they've loved it. So,
great. I'll have to look those up. And then the last question is, have you seen anything recently of any art form that you want to recommend from your house?
Yeah, I just watched Normal People.
Okay.
And it's a show that's on Hulu, and it's a Hulu original that they teamed up with the BBC, and it's an Irish show, and it's based off of a book with the same title, and it's just beautiful. It's like such a simple, it's for me, it's like the kind of thing, it's kind of story and show and film that like I aim to make, where it's like if I made this, I'd be like, I'm retiring, like this is perfect, like this is what I've wanted to do. But it's just such a simple story. It's just two people who meet and continue to get in their way, like to get in each other's way from actually having this wonderful relationship, because they have baggage, because they have issues, but they just keep missing each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it goes from high school to college to post-college, and it's just beautiful. And there's a moment where the character, the male lead, it's just sort of, he's at a museum and he's just staring at a painting for hours. And I felt like that watching this show. I felt like I was at a museum in Europe, just staring at this massive classic painting and just taking it all in and like being moved by it, where it's, you know, I'm looking at one part of it and it's, you know, it's bringing happiness and then sadness. And it's just, it was this cathartic experience watching this show. It was beautiful. I loved it. I cried, I laughed, I smiled. It was wonderful.
I gotta see it.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this. This really made my day.
It was great.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. Anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brandon Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.